The Alabama Crops Report Podcast, your trusted information source for Alabama agriculture.
Hey, everybody. Welcome into another episode of the Alabama Crops Report Podcast. Today is April the 13th, and cotton is pushing 78 cents.
Yeah. As of today, which is April the 13th, futures December's, you know, going to 77 cents.
Yeah, doing good.
Doing dang good.
So you hear Josh there. We got Simmer and Chandler. And guess what we're going to talk about today?
Peanuts.
Cotton. How's everybody doing?
Good.
Doing good.
Doing good.
Hey, is this Jacob's last podcast?
No. He'll be around for another one, maybe. Yeah, we can always request his assistance.
Okay. We'll give him a. We'll have our goodbye to Jacob later. Then we'll talk cotton today.
So I see our predicted Alabama cotton acreage, Josh.
Yeah, we're going to stay about the same as we did last year. USDA's got us predicted at 290,000 acres. I do think that may go up a little bit as we go in, but that's just a speculation.
What
320?
I'm wanting over
320.
So how 320? Did we our planted acres last year? Was that 290 or was that the okay?
Mm-hmm. We intended closer to 320, mm-hmm. and as you remember, it rained all of May.
I thought we had more that didn't get planted, but it was only about 30,000 acres, and that was probably
maybe we intended more than that. I actually have
because that. I remember guys in North Alabama saying that there was like 40% of cotton acres didn't get planted because of the rain and other stuff.
Yeah.
So we will be very close to last year. Now, these are intended acres.
Of course. So this is just an estimation. We won't know until once we get past
planting. When does the actual planted acreage report come out?
I'm going to say the greatest agronomist answer, if it depends. I mean, we're going to be
planting. That USDA number?
I don't know that exact date. It's probably going to be in June.
June,
I mean,
because
guys are still going to be planting in June.
Planting in June.
Down, especially in Southport, Alabama.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So we were off 20% from the intended acres last year.
Okay. So we can expect that similar swing this year?
So that's 350.
350. Okay, so 350. And then
So that's 60,000.
60. So that kind of makes, more.
Yeah.
Okay. And my guess is we're going to be closer to that number than under 300, but I could be wrong. I would have been wrong last year.
Would actually get planted, you mean?
Yeah, I think we'll plant more than 290 this year.
Well, I think that's going to be determined on the weather, obviously. You know, last year had nothing but rain. Right now, we do need some rain.
Yeah.
It is really dry across the state, especially in that southeast corner of Alabama. I'm ready to put cotton in the ground this week, but I'm waiting to catch a rain.
Y'all think, we mentioned about the price going up a little bit. Is it going to swing some growers' decisions on maybe a little bit more acreage, or is this not there where they're like, I'm gonna go in with more than what I thought I would?
I think it's definitely an incentive, and I know these guys are kind of there. I know I talked down with Chris Parker and some other folks in South Alabama. There were still some guys on the fence between peanuts and cotton, and this may shift it to cotton. This may be that little push to put it into cotton acreage.
At 77, 78 cents, we're still planting at a loss.
Right.
So we still need a little bit higher to break even, but I think the momentum is gaining there.
Yeah,
that I think it'll.
Okay.
Because I don't know what peanut contracts are right now, but
no, I don't know.
They haven't been great lately. Jacob's giving a thumbs down.
He don't grow peanuts. There you go.
Yeah.
How much?
375 a ton.
375 a ton.
But Josh, you know, kind of what I think, Ron and I were talking this morning, we're at the point now where, depending on your ground, even if you don't have moisture, you can start sticking seed in.
Oh, yeah.
Right? And just wait.
Yeah.
And if you got stuff that's going to crush real bad, or you don't want to get in that situation, but as far as your seed treatments, they don't really activate until the seed imbibes or swells, and just takes in water, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so you're not going to lose any of your insecticides sitting there.
Right.
We don't want to get into a situation we had last year, Simmer, where we couldn't plant for 3 weeks in May.
Right.
It was like, I remember, it was probably somewhere mid to late April that we had some on-farm trials or grower collaborators up North Alabama, and they're like, hey, we're starting to plant. And it was probably just that week or so, or maybe a few days, they planted. And then for 3 or 4 weeks, nothing. And next thing you know, now we're toward the end of the planting window instead of in the beginning.
Yep.
So I think we're kind of in a better situation this year, but not really because of the rain and all that. So.
Right. And I talked with Chandler this morning. We were talking about cover crops and, you know, conventional tillage. And I said, you know, what's the role of moisture there, you know, with the cover? You know, I always say, you know, I've heard growers say, you know, it's poor man's irrigation. I'm like, well, how much irrigation?
So that's one of the challenges, how much. We don't have an exact percentage because it kind of varies a little bit. But a lot of times when you have a good cereal rye or a lot of good cover crops with good above ground biomass, especially like cereal rye, I like to think about, it not only has good roots to help with water infiltration, so them rains that happen earlier in the year. So as soon as you terminate it, it'll actually start filling in the water and it'll actually start balancing out that water calculator. And then it covers the ground, so it's reducing your loss for soil moisture. And so that's kind of another benefit of cover crops that maybe not everyone thinks about early in the season.
You know, it's interesting. So inside baseball for our listeners, Josh has a really nice little print up of what we're going to talk about. And in it, he has the drought map. And like the only place we don't grow cotton in the whole state is not in the drought.
Yeah.
How about that? Birmingham, that area.
Yep, that little, area.
North, that wide area.
Yeah. And part of that is, you know, like I said, I think Birmingham's in there. And
man, South Alabama is in a pretty bad shape.
Yeah.
Southeast and Alabama so, and this, you know, this is supposed to be released tomorrow as the newest one of the week. So this is actually probably older. I'm assuming that once it gets released tomorrow, that whole southeast corner is going to be entirely red. So the red examples, it's a D3, which is an extreme drought situation. So,
you know, there's something about big cities, all that asphalt and concrete, that just creates a microclimate that I feel like they're more likely to get rainfall than fields are.
Yeah.
And that could just be being crazy, but
No, I've heard, you know, you're not crazy. I've heard stuff about like cities and that kind of stuff with rainfall. It's different. They follow different patterns and stuff. I'm not a meteorologist, but I've heard of this before.
I did go to Mississippi State.
Oh, well.
That's where most meteorologists go to school.
Well, then there you go.
Yeah, I learned something.
Is that true?
Yeah, that's true, yeah.
Is that statistically valid?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
At least the ones on TV. I don't know about anyway. But we need rain either way.
Yeah, we do. We do.
We need rain.
We need
some. So you talk about even it's go time for cotton, right? Even though we're still in April, mid-April.
Right.
Today is April the
13th
when we're recording this, FYI. So you think, were there no chances of rain, grower can still go ahead, and how do they kind of manage that decision?
So it seems like the overall morale right now is, let's go out and plant, which I'm all for it. But, I mean, we make some dang good cotton in May and June. I mean, there's nothing to sneeze at right there. So, I mean, I wouldn't.
It's okay to wait.
Yeah, it's okay to wait.
Yeah.
I would rather wait and make sure I get a good stand and I don't have to have a replant situation. So I think that's definitely in your favor to wait just a second. We can make good cotton, especially in the south part. We got a good long growing season. We can make those full season varieties go all the way out.
When you're thinking about drought too, and like being dry this time of year, some of the people want to go ahead and get out there and start planting. So if you're going to do surface application like urea fertilizer, that's a large investment. So that's another thing that might influence the cotton acres right now, is it's up 35 to 38% for urea for cost of fertilizer, is using an MBPT inhibitor, a urease inhibitor. So if you're putting it out there in that dry ground to help reduce that loss to gas of the nitrogen, you know, it's going to influence the cost. You know, it's going to cost you a little bit extra, but also, one of the things that I've kind of noticed coming to looking around at different places is you need to know how much percent MBPT inhibitor is actually in the product you're buying. Because sometimes you may get a very low dose and you actually need a little bit higher dose to make sure it's following the labeled rate that you're supposed to be using from that product. So product to product, there can be some variability. So always check the label on that.
I don't think we have touched on that before.
I didn't understand most of that.
That's what I said in a polite way.
I just nodded and agreed with him, yeah.
Seemed like we need to have a topic covered on that.
I assume the people that need to know what that means know what it means, though.
Yeah, so if you're going down to the local elevator and you see the urea and you're like, that's funny looking, it's got a green or bluish tint to it, it's probably got an MBPT inhibitor. But if you're seeing it's pure white, which is the original form, that means it doesn't have that urease inhibitor. And urease inhibitor just prevents it from becoming gas. Very common. I've used it a lot in rice production in Arkansas. So where we have humidity, you don't want to hydrolyze on the surface and gas volatilize and lose your nitrogen. you know, you're losing your investment, something you just bought. So you pay a little bit of extra money to put this inhibitor, so it kind of becomes a slow release. And so it slow releases, it helps it actually work its way into the soil instead of being lost in the environment.
Got you. All right. So wait a little bit. Let's see how the weather kind of...
Especially if you dry land. If you're fortunate enough to have some irrigation, I'd say go ahead and roll if you feel comfortable and ready. But right now, I'd hold off for just a second and see if we can get a little bit of moisture in that ground, make sure we get the good stand and all that stuff up. And so kind of brings me into the next thing, you know, getting a good stand. You know, Simmer, we need good planting. We need a good planter set up. That's step one. It's one of our first beginning steps.
Well, hopefully, again, given that we are in mid-April, if you're just cotton and peanuts, I think you still got time to maybe work on your planters in the shop, you know, do everything the best. I feel like that's probably the best time they can spend on making sure the planter, because seed is, again, one of the biggest costs, and we've done a couple of articles here recently on, we did a lot of trials last year, and then the amount of seeding rate issues we see with these planters, you know, and that's just a kind of wasted money. Anytime we're putting out extra seed than what we should be, right, that dollar could have gone towards something else on the farm. So proper planter setup, I think that's probably a key, not just cotton every crop. But again, if you're like cotton peanut, you still have time to make sure that you can do a lot of stuff in the shop, right? Check your seed depth properly, make sure all the seed meters. And hey, we've talked to a lot of dealers around the state. Most of them offer seed meter testing. You can actually take your seed meters off, have them tested. It's about $20 to $25 per meter. But trust me,
that's probably a good investment.
That's a really good investment that you would actually make on your planter, right? Before you even get out in the field and start chasing any planting issues. For the guys who are already planting out in the field, I think the biggest thing is make sure you take, you know, whenever you switch to cotton, you take time on changing all the settings in between, because especially if you're planting corn right now, a lot of our settings, they don't just go straight translate into cotton. Our seed depth is different, or even our, you know, seeding rates, cotton plates and everything, and we see some issues where it's very easy to get in a rush, right, swapping crops, and like, well, I just finished my corn and I gotta get on cotton and then miss something. But again, I think years like this is every time and minute you spend on the planter setup and making sure you double check everything. I mean, we've been doing this, and I don't know, I mean, Jake and them are helping me for the last few years, but I've been doing this for 10 years. We still get out in the field with our planter sometimes where we have neglected something, right? And it's like, okay, we could have done a better job.
Yeah, it's always worth it to get out and check before we get rolling and we've planted several hundred acres and we found an issue. Yeah, always just get out and check before we get rolling.
Yeah, I definitely say seeding rate is a big one, right? You want to, that's probably the most money tied to the seed, especially if you're over applying a lot of seed. Depth and downforce, especially again depending on your soil moisture, because a lot of our guys, maybe as we get closer to rain or something, maybe dusting in, right?
Yep.
That's where you're barely dropping the seed and they just kind of get enough soil, seed to soil contact. If you're in an irrigated situation, all that, you can put that seed a little bit under the soil and turn the pivot on it, you know. But checking that depth, I think, is pretty critical. Again, downforce is something that you're not going to be able to set up in the shop. It's just field by field changes, and that's the thing. Planting is, or even a planter setup, is a dynamic thing. I think what we have learned, it's not just like you set up once, invest your time, and it's ready to go across the whole season. It changes from a field to field, crop to crop. So make sure you're spending the time on that.
Speaking of planting and chasing moisture, according to James Spann on Facebook this morning, we have chances of, quote, meaningful rain and thunderstorms in Alabama by the weekend of April 25-26.
Okay.
Good.
So that would be right.
Like, that'd be good.
Pretty close to where we officially, you know, like we would still be a good planting, beginning to a planting season for cotton.
Generally speaking, that would be early in Alabama.
Yeah. That's plenty of time. That's, you know, where we think we'd be good to rock and roll then.
Yep.
For sure.
Let me ask you this. We're talking about this you know, when the growers should start planting and all that. They get a lot of this seed already, right? Everybody hopefully should already have their seed and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Does that change any of their variety decisions if I'm going to plant this week versus you saying, hey, let's hold off, we're not getting any rain, right? And now I'm into, let's say, first week of May. Will that change or potentially could change some of the variety decisions for them?
I wouldn't say too much. Okay. I mean, sometimes, you know, a lot of times in the early season, what you run into, you plan early, you've got it out there, and sometimes you'll hit a cool spell. You'll get the plant germinated, and it kind of stalls for a couple days because mm-hmm. temps are going low, you know, because whenever you have the heat, that's what's going to fuel the growth. The hotter it is, the faster that crop's going to develop. So it kind of just sits there, and then once those temperatures come back, that crop that you planted early and it turned cool, it's going to come back and go. Whereas if you waited an extra week past that cool period and you planted, honestly, they'll catch up to about the same period of time. So honestly, you didn't really lose time. That plant's able to compensate and grow faster.
Yeah. So the same variety, you can technically...
You could get away with, yeah, if you, like, if you've variety. Got an early and then you've got a mid-maturing, I wouldn't.
What? Okay.
Well,
so,
I don't think anybody ordering seed in December anticipated starting to plant in April 10th, right?
Yeah. No.
Yeah.
Uh-uh.
Yeah.
So,
no, what would be,
most of them are planting
yeah.
later.
So what would be called, because we always refer to this, early planting, let's say on-time planting, whatever, right, our ideal period, and late planting.
Yeah.
What would that be for our situation?
The early planting
yeah.
is what I would call. I'd call it about mid-April.
It's probably yeah, okay. I would say April 15.
So right now we're in the early planting.
Is early.
Yeah, so this okay. is like the first go time we can actually put something in there and actually get a viable stand is how I would.
Well, we got a stand in February. But.
Well, I mean, with that, yes, Scott's growing all kind of different stuff.
To your point about it can get in there and germinate and then just hang out and wait, the stuff that we planted on February the 15th, when Ron and I went and looked at it, week after last or something like that, it was the same age as the stuff that was planted, you know, 5 or 6 weeks later. All that cotton was the exact same
it's
stuff.
Just sad
stands.
Yeah, it came back.
I had a cotton in Tifton 1 year. It just stood there for like a month and a half, and it got me really worried, and there was some nematode problem with the stuff going on in that field. But like, that was like the weirdest thing ever, because you see the plants coming out, you check the field, and you're like, oh, okay, so it's all coming up well, and like, we were gone for like from that field for a good 2 weeks, and you come back and the plants are still there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That was.
So yeah, it's fun. It's fun to funny to watch. It's like, you think, you know,
you would be like growth, coming back to almost double the size of the plant, but it's still sitting right there.
Yeah.
But
I would say, you know, as far as late planted, you get into June, you're starting to get late.
Yeah.
Trying to remember last year, I think I said on the podcast, I'd plant all the
I
way.
I think Dr.
20th.
Dr. Smith, yeah. He was saying even,
maybe.
Yeah, he was like even saying 20th or something that we're still like.
You know, hey, we were right.
And so, good well, that. it was exactly right, because you had conditions, especially in August, that were so favorable for like growth. It was so dry. You had good sunshine. All the conditions were right to make cotton. Yeah. And that's, you know, that doesn't happen every single year.
We were right last year.
You were right, yeah.
That could be totally wrong this year.
So,
talking about early planting cotton, Scott, did you get any jassids on them?
Not yet.
Okay.
So we still in the lower southeast, Alabama, Florida, and Georgia, we have caught one single cotton jassid in 2026, and that was like the first week of January.
Okay. So where do they think they are?
Don't know.
They all died?
Don't know.
Okay. So no activity at all yet as of today?
Don't know. No, we have not seen any. Chandler's got traps in southeast Alabama around cover crops and in central Alabama. None there.
Yeah, we've been checking them since end of January. So I started right after the UGA had one found. But we've been checking them. We have cover crop and not cover crop fields in the Headland, Tallahassee Shorter area, and the Prattville Greater area. We're checking both cover crop fields and non-cover crop fields as we're trying to understand that association. If there is any association with cover crops, are they using cover crops to hide in as an overwintering location? We haven't seen any present, and we're actually getting into that time period where we're starting to terminate them, and we didn't have any by the time of termination as we're prepping for cotton planting the next couple of weeks.
So you both said January, but until what time last year were they present? Like, what was the last known activity in the into last year?
You're putting my memory on the spot now, Simmer, but I mean, I think we were finding them through December.
Oh, you
I think,
okay.
But I don't remember. I don't remember.
I'm just trying to figure out, like you said, we don't know if they died or they went somewhere, all that. Like, what?
Well,
what was that time, you know? Or
the, you know, the problem is not seeing any right now might mean something, and it might not, because we don't know what last year was like.
Yeah.
Right. We do know that last week they were found, an active population was found on hibiscus plants at Walmart in Florence, South Carolina. So we've checked several Walmarts in the state of Alabama and have not found any on our hibiscus yet. But that is, you know, my guess is that's not necessarily, that movement doesn't concern me about infesting cotton fields. That movement concerns me about moving resistance around, because think about it, in these nurseries and stuff, there's no tolerance for insect damage. So they're spraying prophylactically. They're spraying as soon as they see one. They don't have thresholds like we do. And they're using a lot of the same materials that we use, Josh. And so that's what concerns me, is not a bunch of hibiscus with jacid shows up at Lowe's and Dothan, and then 2 weeks later they're all over Houston County or whatever. The concern is some of those get out with resistance alleles, and then that spreads in the population, and in 6 weeks we got a problem, right? I think we'll do a good job managing resistance in cotton fields, but we can't control what happens elsewhere.
Okay. So it's a good news as of now that we have not seen any activity.
To quote Philip Roberts.
Well, we have not even planted a lot of cotton yet, so.
He says it's good news, to quote Philip Roberts. Maybe. Don't know.
Don't know.
Because we don't know what it was like last year, right?
Yeah, we were not monitoring this point in last year.
That's right.
So
we were doing some sweeping and stuff, but we weren't looking like we are now. And so,
which I know last time when we were doing a jacid update and all that, I guess like if we get too cold and all that, that might like inhibit their activity stuff, which we have not been that cold. It's been dry and warm, relatively,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I'm surprised we haven't found one yet.
That's what I was getting
at.
The
last week or so.
Huh, okay.
Yeah. I will be shocked if we don't find them in the next 2 weeks somewhere. Where they're going to be first is
south
okra.
To north?
Yeah, south, yeah. And it's going to be on okra patches. That's where they're going to show up first. If I had to guess.
Yeah.
Which I do, because I don't know.
Yeah. Maybe.
Maybe.
Maybe. So along them same lines, Scott, you know, we always obviously we're talking about the J word, jacids, but what about early season thrips for cotton?
Yeah, thrips. If you look at the thrips infestation predictor model from North Carolina State that we've been talking about for a long time now, as of right now, it's predicting probably the highest pressure we've ever had, certainly since I've been here.
Okay.
And that starts in late April and runs through the first 2 weeks of May, which is not really where we expect it to be. But it's just so dry. There's nothing else for them to be on. And
right.
So, you know, ditch banks don't have much. They're going to move into something that's lush and coming up, and that's going to be cotton. Who knows? It doesn't cause yield loss, but we may even see some thrips injury in soybeans this year. I think the pressure is just going to be that high from them moving.
Wow.
I could be wrong, but yeah, it's going to be an interesting year. So if you're not familiar with the cotton tip, cotton thrips infestation predictor model, it's a mouthful. If you just Google cotton thrips model, you'll find it. NC State's got the website. You can go in there and click a location for one of your farms. You don't really need to run it for every farm, but just you pick a planting date or a predicted planting date, and it will give you a relative risk of thrips infestation across the season, and it'll also show you that risk for last year. So as an example, I've got it pulled up right now on the iPad. I picked a planting date of April 22nd. This year, that is a 0.8 out of a 1. A 1 is the worst it could be. Last year, April 22nd, was a 0.2.
Yeah, wow. That's significantly different.
Why April that 27th, much higher risk this year?
Because it's so much drier.
Dry.
So dry. There's not as much. I mean, if you look at crimson clover and stuff out there right now, it looks sad. It looks bad because it's so dry. Everything looks sad. Last year, April 27th was a 0.4. This year, it's a 1. Don't see very many 1s. And yeah. We always say you don't use this model for when to plant, but you use it for when to use your Thrive On.
Right.
If you're going to use Thrive On cotton, because we expect it to stand up very well.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you're going to use something like Ag Logic, put that in your highest risk window.
Right.
And know which fields are likely to need a foliar spray if you don't have Thrive On or if you don't have stuff like Ag Logic. And it actually, it's pretty neat. Think about a hunting rifle with a red dot scope. It gives you a red dot, and it gives you the day you need to spray.
Oh, wow.
It's pretty cool. I'd never noticed that before. And so you can use that to help you also. That don't actually look like that's what that is, but that's what – oh, no, here's the red dot. I'm on the wrong one, yeah. So you can use that as a way to know – to try to plan the logistics on the farm of when I need to spray my cotton. But yeah.
How many sprays a grower usually does for trips?
Usually one if they early need to. On. Yeah. It's the best timing is actually when that first leaf is still furled up in the terminal. It's the best timing. They lay most of the eggs on the cotyledons, and then the immatures hatch out and they get inside the furrow and feed on the top of the leaf, and that's why we see the bubbling up, because it's not killing the bottom side of the leaf tissue, it's killing the upper side. So that's why you see that bubbling. The problem is, you really, when you make a spray, generally speaking, you are protecting the next leaf that emerges, not the one that's about to, because like I said, they're inside that furrow, so you can't get the insecticide to them as easily. But anyway, that's not really the point of today. But yeah, all that to say, we expect very high thrips pressure this year.
Okay. So that means we better have some good thrips protection out there, especially if we're planting,
Potentially, if I may, potentially a larger peak of early season plant bugs, too.
Okay.
We'll see. But, you know, daisy fleabane is their primary host, and in dry springs, the fleabane all kind of plays out at one time, and they move really quick into cotton. Which is not always a bad thing, because it makes it easier to time up a spray. When it's a wetter spring or a more normal spring, quote unquote, and the fleabane plays out over an extended period of time, that movement also plays out over an extended period of time. And so maybe this will help us on plant bugs. Maybe not. I don't know.
Time will tell.
Well, yeah.
So scout.
Maybe.
scout.
Scout early, scout often.
Yes,
for sure. Hire a consultant, hire a scout, somebody that can get out and look at your crop. I just don't think we can do this thing without one.
Nope.
And another point that Ron and I were talking about while we're still talking about Jacids is that if you think back to last year, they weren't in every field. They weren't even in every field in a local area, right? And so you can't just – as of right now, we can't comfortably say if you find them in a couple of fields on a farm, spray everything. Or, you know, everything's going to get sprayed this week. And so you need to scout as many. I know you can't scout every single field, but you need to scout as many fields as you can and be prepared to treat.
Could be a field by field.
Could we could be doing precision ag this year. Precision, you know, we invented precision ag.
Precision management of jacids.
Yeah, that's right. We in entomology we invented precision ag. We just called it IPM instead, and it's not as flashy as precision ag is today. But but we started treating fields when needed based on the local data from that specific field. But anyway, another.
That's why you and I get along well.
That's right. We're both just a couple of precision ag guys.
Yeah.
But we can get off into that another time also.
All right. So, cotton varieties for this year.
One last plug. So, if, like Summer said, most of you guys have already chosen your varieties. You've got them all picked out. But if you don't, you're still trying to choose. There's a couple tools. We've got the Auburn OVT cotton variety trials. That information is there, along with the cotton on-farm large plot variety trials. That information is also there. It's in the cotton newsletter. I put it out. Remember to follow the Auburn Cotton Shorts newsletter for updates. It'll be put out monthly. If something is really pertinent to the time, we'll put it out more than that, but make sure to keep up to date there.
Briefly explain to me, how are those two different, Josh?
So the Auburn OVT trials, those are going to be your small plot research. They're going to be more spread across the state. You're going to have a variety of conditions such as irrigated, dry land conditions, and different planting dates in early and late. So a little bit more information, but on a little bit smaller scale, more varieties. On the Auburn on-farm variety trials, we're going to have a less number of locations. However, the plot size is going to be significantly larger. With more your standard commercial varieties.
More with growers.
These more are grower this is grower-centered, grower yes. This is grower-focused, yes.
So, Josh, Henry likes to say that the Henry Jordan, who runs OVT, he likes to say that the OVT shows you the potential of that variety, hopefully when everything's done right.
Correct. Right, yeah.
The on-farm variety trial shows you what it does in the real world.
Yeah.
And so you can both, they're very complementary for making decisions.
Oh, also, he can put a lot more in the mix, right, in a very small plot.
Yeah, that's right.
Sure, yeah. We can look at a bunch of different things at one time. So that allows us to give me more flexibility so we can know, hey, we know a little bit of something on this variety.
Yeah, and I would kind of echo what you said. I don't think a lot of universities have a really nice tool for variety selection. In fact, I know even some institutions that are looking for the ways to compile their variety data over the years and make some of that. I think Auburn's got probably one of the nicest tools, right?
I would say so.
Where you can go in, look at by location, year, specific, all that. I think that's one of the best tools out there. So make sure to check it out.
Utilize it. Tools are there.
Exactly. And he spends a lot of effort in managing and maintaining that tool as well.
Yes. Yes, he does. Henry does a great job.
All right. Anything else we need to cover?
No, I'd say next time we record this, hopefully growers would be out in the field. We'll have some rain across the state.
Have some rain. I'll be walking cotton. That's what my plan is.
Hey, let's just real quickly. I was talking with the farmer last week. We're up to 77, 78 cents. Maybe book just a little bit. Book some.
It's like investing.
Yeah, just a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, you never know what it's going to do. Maybe just book a couple acres.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe not. I thought somebody
would
do like,
it.
Yeah.
Huh? Can you do it at a time?
Yeah.
Like
that
small?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't know if you can literally book a couple acres, but you can book a couple bales. You know, just.
Yeah.
While there's a price on the way up, get a little
bit. Yeah. You know. It's better than, 66 cents?
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
So,
yeah. It ain't near where it needs to be, but. I mean, we hope the trend continues, but you never know.
Absolutely.
All right, guys. Well, enjoyed it. As always, appreciate our listeners, people that come in every week and catch up with us. So if there's any topics or conversations we need to have, please don't hesitate to reach out and let us know. And as always, if any of us with Alabama Extension could do anything to help, let us know.
The Alabama Crops Report is a production of the Alabama Cooperative Extension System.